Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. In here, the result is always positive. You will learn more about who you are, why you are here, and where you are going than you ever thought possible. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Next week, the plan is to have toll-free numbers through which you can reach the world with your thoughts and your voice. If you want to be on the program tonight, you can go to www.bbsradio.com and enter through the program link for X Squared Radio and join the chat room. We will monitor this and respond during the program. If you want to email the program, you can do so through bagnew@x2-radio.com. Tonight, in our cosmology section, we are going to talk about eternal perspective. I promise you will have your eyes opened to the stars, ancient writings, and possibly your soul. If you're interested in time travel, deep space exploration, or end times prophecies, you do not want to miss this section tonight. In our section on the Nephilim, we are going to explore the possibility of the return of the giants. Taxpayers, do you know where your money is being spent? You might be anxious to know just what those health researchers are doing out there. First, we'll pay some bills. Have you ever wondered how the Earth was created and relocated to its present orbit? Would you like to know how the Earth can be both 7,000 years old and 4.5 billion years old? Did you know that Noah told the people he had sailed across the cosmic sea when he arrived on the other side of the flood? The answers to these and thousands of other questions about intelligent design can be found in the bestseller, The Ark of Millions of Years. Forward Magazine calls it the most comprehensive book ever written on the creation of the Earth. Thousands of readers call it the greatest story on the universe. It's available in soft or hardcover at www.arkofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure you spell ark like Noah's Ark. Or you can pick it up at your local Barnes & Noble, Joseph Beth, and now Davis Kidd Booksellers, Nashville and Jackson and Memphis, Tennessee. If you buy from the website during the program tonight, you will get the book. In addition, you'll get the entire book on audio CD. We'll mail it to you for free. So you can listen to it in your vehicle, you can share it with friends, listen to it while you're out in the shop working on that favorite project. And now our cosmology section on eternal perspective. Many people talk about eternal perspective. Now, eternity is too long for most people to even think about. For most people, it means there is no end. That's not so hard to imagine. We wake up every day to a new day. The sun comes up every single day. And as we get older, we get better perspective as far as, you know, yes, there's going to be another day. But we physicists like to think of time in a rather different way. We like to think of it like mathematicians, even though not all of us are very good mathematicians. We know math, but we don't consider ourselves mathematicians like a PhD in mathematics might be. Where you might see the arrow of time only going in one direction, we see it going equally in both directions, forward and backward. It's kind of like aiming a camera into the sky and then throwing a ball into the view of that camera, watching it go up to the very top of its arc, turn around, and come down. If you ran the film forward, it would be no different than running the film backward. The parabolic travel of the ball that you threw into the camera's view would be the same, going forward or backward. This is the way physicists like to think about time. In reality, it might not really work that way. For instance, if an egg, a raw egg, rolled off the table and onto the floor and splattered, that is quite a probable activity. In fact, it's happened in my own kitchen. It's happened on camping trips. But I've never seen an egg go from the splattered condition on the ground, fly up into the air, and land safely all in one piece on the table. The probability of that happening, well, I can't calculate it. I don't know anybody that can calculate it. In fact, I really don't even think it's possible. It could be probable, but not possible. So you see, the arrow of time, even though physicists think of it equally in both directions, in one direction it's more probable than in the other direction. Now, certainly stars live a long time, but the lights we observe in the heavens are very, very old. Besides our sun, the nearest stars to Earth are in the Centauri system. There are three known stars about 4.2 light years away. The brightest star in the heavens that we can see from Earth is Sirius, which is about 8.2 light years away. Now, when we say light years, that means the distance light can travel in a year, at least in our gravitational field. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. But we can see stars much, much further away. On October 7th, 1997, NASA announced that astronomers using the Hubble Space Telescope had identified what may be the biggest and brightest star in the entire universe. Scientists who named the star, they named it after the pistol-shaped nebula, or gas cloud, which surrounds it. They call it the Pistol Star. This star, although it can't be seen with the naked eye now because of interstellar dust between Earth and the center of our Milky Way galaxy where the star is located, the Pistol Star was first seen in the early 1990s with infrared equipment on Earth-based telescopes, but it wasn't until similar heat-detecting instruments were placed aboard the Hubble Space Telescope, and they provided a better look, that the UCLA team realized this magnificent star's significance. It is, well, we like to call it a celestial mammoth. It releases about 10 million times more power than our sun, and it is 100 times more massive. In about 6 seconds, it will release as much energy as our sun does in an entire year. The Pistol Star has an estimated diameter. It's a little hard to tell exactly what the hard surface of the star is, but it has an estimated diameter of 186 million to 280 million miles. Now, I know that's a large error of about 100 million miles, but this is about as clearly as we can see this star, even with the equipment we have. Our sun has a diameter of less than a million miles across, and it is 93 million miles from the Earth. Well, it doesn't take a great mathematician to figure out that the entire diameter of the Earth's orbit around the sun is about the diameter of the Pistol Star. That will give you an idea how massive this star is. And it is rotating on its axis. The Pistol Star is about 25,000 light years away from Earth. And that means that, well, it's about 6 trillion miles, but that means that light that leaves that star takes 25,000 years to reach Earth. That means that we are, even with the Hubble telescope, looking at the distant past of this star. Now keep in mind that with that amount of mass in a concentrated region, there's a tremendous warping of space-time. What does that mean? Well, even though the speed of light is constant, and we say it in miles, it is 186,000 miles per second. It's 300,000 kilometers per second. You'll notice that speed is measured with two components, distance and time. Now, the speed is the same. 186,000 miles per second is 186,000 miles per second. That's the mathematical term for the speed of light. But strong gravitational fields, which means the acceleration we call gravity, on this planet it's 32 feet per second per second, it's much higher on a heavy gravity zone. And this has an influence on the time factor. That means that the distance traveled is the same, but the amount of time it takes to do that distance, although it's still 1 second, 1 second in that gravitational field might be equal to 10,000 years in another region where there is only a very weak gravitational field. In other words, 1 second on the surface of the pistol star is different than 1 second on the surface of the Earth. This is how gravity changes time. The light we see from this star may be far older than 25,000 years. Such a luminous star, it should be very bright in the sky, but of course there are lots of clouds of tiny dust grains between us and the nebulous center. They strongly absorb most of the light being emitted by the star. We can see it with a telescope, but in fact, without the interstellar dust absorption, the star would be visible with the naked eye, even at its distance of 25,000 light years. And keep in mind that we're assuming that the ruler that we're using, 1 second, is the same here as it is there. We actually don't know. The furthest that man has actually traveled is 275,000 miles around the moon and back. That's not a very long distance for men to travel. We do see, though, that even at the 18,000 miles an hour that man must maintain to stay in orbit around the Earth, the clock on the space shuttle is different than the clock on the Earth. It's only a few fractions of a second over a time of a mission, but it is different. Now, you take that speed up very, very fast, or you take that gravitational field up very, very high, and time begins to change. So why do I bring up these examples? Because the light we see from these sources at the same moment in time is many thousands of times different in age. If we look at the light from, say, Sirius, which is a very bright star in the western sky, seeing the way that star looked a mere 8.2 years ago. This means that in the year 1998, that star, Sirius, it exploded, and we would not know about it for another year. When we look at the light from the pistol star, we are seeing the way it looked, we assume, 25,000 years ago. This is our Earth perspective. If you consider the additional time difference between the gravitational field of the pistol star and that of Earth, it could be even older than that. This is the way man has always looked at the universe. But what I want to have you do tonight is think about another perspective, one that takes into account all of these bodies of matter in our universe and dimension at once in real time. Let's talk about life for a moment. Let's start with a short question and a long answer. when do we begin to have an eternal perspective? You think it's when we're very young? Is that when we begin to have an eternal perspective? No. We humans, when we're very young, are like animals. We have no self-control. We are hungry, sleepy, we're cold, we're wet, we're bored, and all right now. There's no logic or explanation. Waiting for supper is grounds for absolute starvation. There's not even enough mortal perspective to appreciate even the smallest increment of time. Think back on how long it took you to get through the third grade and compare it with the adult perception of time between, say, Christmases. You'll get the picture. Along around May, you better start your Christmas shopping after you reach 50 because Christmas is going to be here in about 3 weeks. But when you're a kid, when it's Thanksgiving, it's a year until Christmas comes. You just don't have the perspective. You don't have the patience. You're nothing more than a hairless ape, blown around by every wind of doctrine. How about when we're teenagers? Teenagers are pretty smart. My teenagers tell me they're pretty smart. When we're teenagers, do we have eternal perspective? No. Just the other day, a teenager said to me, "I can't wait until high school is over and I can get a job and be free." Yeah, try to tell them that their high school days are the best days of their lives, and you'll be met with a barrage of protests, let me tell you. How about when we reach the age of about 25 or 30? You think then we begin to develop eternal perspective? When we start to have enough mortal history to measure waiting for something, the seemingly endless tunnel down which we travel to get our bachelor's degree, it eventually comes to an end. We eventually get that degree. It's a great sense of accomplishment. We can't believe those 4 or 5, and in some cases 7 or 8 years, have gone by, and we finally have that sheepskin on the wall. We also have enough experience to know that the future may be reachable with time. But it is most definitely reachable with applied imagination. And this is about the age when great engineers, great musicians, great artists, and even great remote viewers have their abilities begin to peak. Still, by and large, we're plagued with humanistic viewpoints and a possible resentment for the older generation. Now, what do I mean by humanism? Well, I'll cover that in just a minute. I want to cover what happens to us when we reach the age of about 40 or 50. Now the concept of eternity or eternal perspective begins to get clear in our minds. If one had been looking at the stars and planets for half of this time, you might have witnessed something actually move in the heavens. Unless, of course, it's a comet or something. You might get lucky enough to see one of those. But as far as stars moving around or the Earth changing its perspective relative to the stars, it will take at least that long before you see something move in the heavens. Now, you might notice the landscape change, or perhaps a volcano or two, or a major earthquake or two. So you've got that perspective too, some geological perspective. And you might have seen a generation grow up. But there's more to it than this. And it is important for the race that you understand this. It is here, at this age of about 40 or 50, that we begin to have a real sense of the future. Not because there isn't much time left. For some of us, maybe 100 years left. For some of us, maybe 10 or 20 years left. It's not just because of that. It's because the noise of life begins to slow down a little bit, and we begin to have this perspective like a physicist does. We can see some of the past. We can expect some of the future. And it begins to give us this perspective. Well, let me see here. Let's see if we can do another commercial, and then we will continue this discussion. Intelligent design is the hottest subject in the world today. It is attracting attention as the most plausible alternative to evolution. The theory of evolution is so full of holes, the scientific community really wonders how it is even called a theory. A theory would have some kind of scientific method applied to it to assemble the facts to support and possibly prove the theory to be fact. No such thing has ever been done to support the theory of evolution. For all the countless dollars and man years that have been spent, there has not been so much as a single cell that has been shown to have evolved from another species. Now, there is a book that explains how species came to be and how the Earth was created. The Ark of Millions of Years is called by thousands of readers in many countries the Intelligent Design Handbook. The book is true. The facts are real and provable. And it is available at www.arkofmillionsofyears.com or at your local Barnes & Noble, Joseph Beth, or Davis Kidd Booksellers. And if you buy tonight during the show, we will include free shipping. And if you buy the hardback, you will be sent the entire book on audio CD for free. Listen to it in your car, your iPod, or on your computer. Share them with friends that need to know the truth. Okay, so why is it important to have a perspective? Because the survival of any race, any civilization, is based upon its ability to plan for the future. If you are only planning until the next meal, or the next payday, or the next bonus, or even the next vacation, you are not doing it right. If you are a hunter, gatherer, moving with the herd, picking berries as you go, and you're not cultivating anything, you're not doing it right. So how does one plan to be somewhere or to be something in the future? Here is the secret. You'll want to go back to the archives and play this over and over again, because this is the secret of all success, not just personal success, but the success of a civilization and the success of a race. Here it is. You need a clear vision of where you want to be, what you want to be. Have you ever watched a sculptor or an artist working with some media other than paint, like a stone carver or a clay sculptor or a wood carver? I was watching a man with a chainsaw the other day at the county fair, and he was sculpting bears out of wooden logs. I watched for a few minutes with my wife, and then leaned over to ask her a question. How does he see the bear inside the log? Well, she looked at me like I was nuts. No. I said, he sees the bear inside the log and then cuts away the parts that aren't the bear. This is what a stone cutter does as well. If you have ever worked with clay, it's a little different because you are shaping the wet clay to something you visualize. And the more skilled the artist, the less scrap he makes. Well, the master of the future can get a clear vision of it. He can see the house he wants. He can see the place where it sits. He can see the furniture inside and the art hanging on the walls. He can smell the flowers in his garden and feel the breeze blowing through the trees. By observing this scene, he has affected his present. But simply visualizing something doesn't make it appear. Every sculptor makes mistakes and throws stone or wood or clay into the trash. Once that work of art is cracked or chipped or burned, it cannot be repaired into what it was meant to be. Not so with humans. But we'll cover that in a moment. Start with the simple and small at first. This is the act of spiritual creation. If you have done it right, you can practically reach out and hold these visions in your hands. Without this ability to see this vision or create this vision, one cannot make a plan that makes this vision become a dimensional reality. What does that mean? Well, I like to call this my but first list. No, it doesn't mean going through life walking backwards all the time. It means that while you are standing in the future with your dream in your hands, you need to say, but first, I need to do this. And then say again, but first I need to do this, and but first I need to do this, and so forth, until you have reached the point in space and time where you are standing on Earth at this very moment. If you have completed this process correctly, you will have made a path of breadcrumbs back to the future point where that dream was created. Now, follow the path, and you have no choice but to reach the very point you dreamed about. You can start small. You don't have to start 20 years out in the future. You can start 1 year out in the future. Yes, observing the future will affect your present. And every civilization who has become successful at doing this will survive. Civilizations that are poor at this or only think short-sightedly, this works with companies, this works with marriages, and this works with personal success as well. Now, the other end of the spectrum, the past. We are all very used to looking at the past by looking at stars. Well, I say everybody is. If you haven't looked in a telescope or you haven't imagined about stars and their light that they give off, these are the things we can see in the heavens. Planets and asteroids, they don't give off very much light. They're very difficult to see from Earth. Is there any instrument that can look at these distant stars in their present state? No. Only mankind seems to behold the way a star might be 25,000 years before we actually see the light from that star with our telescopes. Only mankind has a way of visualizing things in the past and things in the future. There is no scientific way we can detect the present state of the pistol star. No scientific way. For all we know, that star went supernova and is sending dozens of planets and asteroids in our direction at near the speed of light. That means that there is a possibility particles from the size of a grain of sand to the size of Jupiter traveling at that speed would arrive a few days after the light from the explosion reached our most powerful telescopes. Most scientists believe that the way things are moving and acting in the universe today are the way they have acted for billions of years, and will yet act for many more billions of years. It is a philosophy known as humanism. We've talked about it here before, but let's talk about it again just for a moment. Let's suppose you have a graduated cylinder left under a dripping faucet in the sink, and it's half full of water. Well, an astute observer would count the number of drops per minute, see the change in volume, and calculate the amount of time the cylinder has been sitting under the dripping faucet. That is humanism. What the observer does not take into consideration is that someone had the faucet turned on and only shut it off, leaving it dripping, a few minutes before the observer walked into the room. This is cataclysm, or catastrophic way of looking at the graduated cylinder. The cataclysm, or catastrophe, of filling the cylinder with running water was not and could not be considered by the observer. Only with his imagination could he say, I'm not sure how long this graduated cylinder has been sitting here. Someone may have turned on the faucet, turned it off, and left it dripping, and it's actually only been here a minute or two. Well, the way light displays the universe to us now is not the truth. It's only a past picture of the universe. We're not getting the clear picture just by looking through our telescope. We physicists, our community is becoming more and more divided. I'd say the last 5 years, it's really become divided, especially since we begin thinking about gravitational waves and warping space-time with strong gravitational fields. This begins to change the consistency, the steadiness, the stasis of the universe. And we begin to see that it's almost been our religious pride that has made us think that we are the center of the universe and everything is interpreted according to our point of view and no one else's. But how does this relate to eternal perspective? Well, having an eternal perspective will reveal to us that just because our scientists say things are a certain way, because no one has come along in their lifetime and proved them wrong, it's not necessarily a safe investment. Doubting? Yes. Seeking truth? Yes. Wondering about the mysteries of heaven is the divine nature of mankind. Reaching out to understand the nature of God is as old as the first human on the earth. Can't always be done in a scientific manner. Sometimes we have to use our imagination. Sometimes we have to exercise this special ability that we have of being able to see just a little bit further than instruments will tell us. We have to reach out just a little bit further than known knowledge. And lo and behold, our mind is opened up and pure knowledge is poured in. Well, no matter what church you attend, no matter what your ancestry or your present nationality, you have a history and a lineage of which you might not be aware. You are children of the stars. The real ET is in the mirror. If you want to learn more about where you came from, why you are here, and where you might be going from here, you need to read The Arc of Millions of Years this year. It would make a wonderful Christmas gift. And it's available at your local Barnes & Noble, or Joseph Beth Booksellers, or Davis Kidd Booksellers. And if you want to get the free audio version of the book, you should purchase it at the website at www.arcofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure you spell ARK, A-R-K, like Noah's Ark. Even if you bought the book before the audiobook was available, if you request it by registering at the website, we will send it to you for free by mail on CD, ready to play in your car or truck. We don't want you to pass this up. In our Nephilim section tonight, the Nephilim are the ancient fallen angels that fathered the races of giants with mortal women. The Nephilim were cast to this dimension, or this universe, as punishment for their transgressions. They are immortal, they are off-worlders, they are not of this creation, nor are they of an ancient civilization of Earth. They have worked for tens of thousands of years to corrupt the seed of man. They have done it through teaching and leadership, and they've also done it through genetics. Their DNA is very different from ours. It can combine with any animal. Not only could their DNA produce giants, the offspring could reproduce. The giants were not hybrids. They weren't like mules made from a donkey and a horse. They could reproduce. And their genes, although the races of giants have long since been eliminated through warfare or starvation or genetic selective genetics, their genes still float around in our DNA. Well, the giants proliferated all over the planet. Yes, there were male and female giants, but male giants were insanely lustful toward mortal women. Their desire for the long hair of mortal women was so powerful, many tribes of men required their women to cover their heads lest they tempt the angels. The burqa is a good example of that. The head covering of many Protestant and Catholic religions required women required to cover their heads when they go to church is to keep them from tempting the angels. And, of course, men devised a plan to defeat the giants, which was not so easy to do. They devised weapons with which to fight them in war. But, you know, a giant coming against a man is quite a bit different. Somebody that's 15 feet tall, weighs 500 pounds, can run 40 miles an hour, cleave a man in two with a single blow of his sword, can yell so loud that they can burst the sinuses and eardrums of a man, they can do quite a damage on the battlefield. But men did devise a way to fight them on the battlefield. But that wasn't their great advantage. Men had two major advantages over giants. Men, humans, have a soul. And humans multiply with a much higher survival rate than giants. Men are built to handle the gravity of this planet. Giants do not age well on this planet. Although they are very strong, very fast, and twice as intelligent as humans, they habitually committed suicide rather than suffer the paralysis of aging. By the time of the Renaissance, most of the tribes of giants had been starved out or destroyed. Some of the tribes of men refused to submit their women to the desires of the giants. They did not let them breed with them. They moved into the wilderness. They kept moving and kept staying away from them. And they were protected in many ways. Some of them were prophetic ways. But eventually, the giants simply could not multiply anymore, and they were defeated. Now, why do we bring this up tonight? Because there is a possibility that they will return. How? How will they return? Well, many people have thought, well, gee, they'll land in spaceships, they'll file out, and they will return this way. Well, I think, personally, that's the stuff of science fiction. I think maybe UFOs have been around a long time. I haven't personally seen one, but if I've seen paintings of them in the 17th century. I've seen carvings of them. I've heard countless numbers of stories, countless numbers of testimonies, but I haven't held one in my hands, so I'm a little bit of a skeptic. But let me tell you, there is no area of scientific research that receives more money, more grants, than that of healthcare. Healthcare. Actually, that's a little deceiving. Actually, the area that gets the most attention for research dollars is the human genome. What have they discovered? Oh, you'd be surprised what they've discovered. They've discovered the gene that will restore hair to the scalp of a man. Don't think you'll ever see it in a treatment center, but they have discovered that. They've discovered the gene that determines hair color. They've discovered all kinds of genes, and yes, they have discovered the ancient giantish gene. They have isolated these traits not only in human genes, but also in the remains of the giants themselves. The DNA is still capable of combining with human DNA. These traits come alive again. There are many scientists in the world today who believe that there are governments who are very interested in developing the perfect fighting man. Here are some of the traits of the giant. Well, they can average 12 to 15 feet tall. They can run over 40 miles an hour. They can carry weights in excess of 5,000 pounds. They have twice the brain capacity of normal humans. And as I said before, they're capable of yelling so loudly that they can cause an effect known as harmonic levitation. They can actually move things, and they can yell so loud. They have tremendous lung capacity, and they have a special sinus cavity, multiple rows of teeth that allows them to make sounds we cannot make. They also have six fingers and six toes. And from evidence that we've been able to uncover, and from the fantastic research of Stephen Quayle, we have determined that they had a body temperature of around 115 degrees, easily accommodating sub-zero temperatures. It also requires a huge amount of calories to maintain their strength and health. In ancient times, they enslaved human communities to keep food on the table. They used their great strength, their great intelligence, their propensity for violence to rule over men. And many, many giantish descendants were great leaders. Gilgamesh, Nimrod, Noah was of such large stature that his father Lamech accused his wife of having relations with a giant or with one of the watchers, the fallen angels, which of course was not true. Noah just had great divine ability. Charlemagne, another good example of a giant. Well, it will again be at the hands of the Nephilim that they return to our world. This time, it is through the guiding advice they have always given to the leaders of the world. It's true. If you do your research, a little bit of reading, you will discover that the Nephilim have always worked with the kings of the earth. There are only a few of the Nephilim. About 200 is what the Book of Enoch recollects that there were. But not all of them were on the earth at all times. They are able to travel between planets. And their mission, as I said before, is to corrupt all of the seed of man. Now, does that mean that they just come to the planet and wipe it out? I think they're certainly capable of doing that, developing a weapon that would wipe all life out on the planet. But that doesn't reach their goal. That doesn't corrupt mankind. Slaughtering innocent people doesn't do anything, because we are eternal beings. Our souls are eternal, even if we're just having a mortal experience here on this earth. When our bodies decay, or get sick and die, or grow old and die, that's not the end of it. That's why it's so important to have this eternal perspective, to reach beyond, and to bring that future all the way back to where you're standing right now, listening to this broadcast. It's important. It's vital, not only to you, but also to your family, your community, your nation, and the race. Because the Nephilim are dedicated to corrupting man, making him choose evil, sidetracking him, making him forget that he's an eternal being, whose home is in the stars, making him waste his mortal life so that he goes through life a violent, jealous, short-sighted animal, reaching only from one payday to the next, hating each other, not seeing the true value of a living thing. This is what the Nephilim are after. This is their method of capture. It's not enough to wipe us out. They must make us choose evil. That's the mission of the Nephilim. So why bring the giants back? Because this genetic means is one of their greatest tools for corrupting the seed of mankind. They were so successful at doing this the first time around that on Noah's world, the genetics were so corrupted. The institution of a marriage between a man and a woman, nurturing, caring, and loving their own children, was so corrupted. It was so lost to the society of man that almost the entire civilization was wiped out during the flood. Clean the slate, reboot the planet, shake the Etch-a-Sketch, wipe the entire pattern out, and start over again. It was completely corrupted. Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, although I'm trying to make this case as one, to look at the way the earth is today and see that more evil is done in 24 hours in our day than in 25 years, 200 years ago. But that also means that this balance that we have between good and evil, this opposition in all things, it also means that there is greater capacity to do good now than ever before. And so it is a battle not a, maybe a battle of armies, but a battle of choices. As we develop this eternal perspective, as we see that we are not alone in the universe, that there are others out there and they are not invested in our success. They are invested in our doom, our failure, our utter ignorant failure. It is time to defend ourselves. We defend ourselves by making right choices. We defend ourselves by loving one another. We defend ourselves by absorbing as much knowledge as we can every single day about who we are, where we came from, where we're going. This is the central theme of X Squared Radio. This is why we say this is where the past meets the future. The past times the future is X Squared, and the result is always positive. We want you to know who you are. You did not crawl forth out of the primordial ooze and happen to be the most advanced tool user on the planet. That is not who you are. You are destined to develop into something far greater than that. In fact, maybe over the next few shows, we will begin to touch on maybe what that potential might be. I promise you, for most of you, it is further than you can imagine. Starting next week, we are going to have a toll-free number. You will be able to call in and ask questions, and I will do my very best to answer those. This is the reason we put X Squared Radio together. And as we build this broadcast, we bring more and more facts to bear. We make our case for the race of man. You're going to see the universe change forever. This is the program that's going to do it. With your help, your support, your listening, we are going to reach this goal. There are things about this planet you need to know. There are things that are happening in space. Some of it's being measured. Some of it we're putting together measuring equipment to look at it. You need to know. We want you to be informed. We want you to have your imagination piqued, fueled, energized. Yes, maybe even inspired. I promise you, 1 hour a week, every Wednesday night, 10 to 11 Eastern Standard Time, all you need to do is tune in to X Squared Radio, participate by chat, participate by email, participate by phone calls, or just listen. I promise you will grow, and you will have your eyes opened and be able to see things you never thought possible. Earth explorers, take care of yourselves. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. And we will see you next Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a BoomService.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program. And we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.